Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we're back, guys. We're back. Our first UFC event of the year, UFC Vegas 101, Mackenzie Dern versus Amanda Ribas, is coming up this Saturday, January 11th, and we have our predictions for you right here on today's episode. We'll be looking at all 14 fights as of right now. It is currently Friday, 1:12 p.m., and we have all 14 fights still intact. We'll be going through all of those as we predict who will win each contest. As well, we're going to be looking at the wild card weekend of the NFL. We have a plethora of games. I'm excited. My Vikings play. You already know we got predictions for every single one of those games. And as well, your surprise for the episode, how about we go through and rank every pay-per-view that occurred in the UFC for 2024? We had 14 of them. There were some good ones. There were some not so good ones. But on every card, there was at least one or two good moments. My list may be controversial, so we'll have to see. But, you know, this has been unorthodox as I had to cut some stuff from this episode. And when I mean cut, I just mean I move it to a new episode. But we will not be looking at anything in pop culture. We will not be looking at any new UFC fights as we have lots to talk about. So let's kick things off by ranking every single UFC pay-per-view that occurred in 2024. And there were a lot, and we were able to catch a majority of the fights that occurred on every one of these pay-per-views. But, you know, some had to be the worst, some had to be the best. And my criteria for this is the card as a whole. Now, I do give some more points to the main card compared to the prelims, but we do look at the card as a whole. So some of these are going to be like, what, the main event for this was awesome. The main event doesn't dictate as a whole how good the entire card was. It does help, but it doesn't dictate it. So with that, that's our criteria. Let's kick things off with the number 14 pay-per-view on our list, which is UFC 302. UFC 302 coming to you from Newark, New Jersey on June 1st. The main event was a lightweight championship matchup between Islam Makhachev and Dustin Poirier, which was your fight of the night and a performance of the night. But this card as a whole just wasn't all that. You know, you had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You had 12 fights, only 3 finishes, all of them submissions, oddly. And as the card kicked off, you know, you get split decision, 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 decision. The issue with these decisions, they're not that interesting. Finally, you're 6 fights in, Halt and Almeida, Alexander Romanov. It's nice to see Halt and Almeida getting a finish, but it's kind of a sloppy grappling matchup. After that, Roman Kopilov, Cesar Almeida in a very close split decision, which I honestly didn't think was a split decision, but that was somewhat exciting. You get into the main card, Randy Bound, Elizio Zaleski dos Santos, so boring. Nico Price, Alex Morono, you know, everyone questioned why this was on the main card, and after it happened, we were still questioning why it was on the main card. Kevin Holland, Michael Okejcek, Kevin Holland submitting him with an armbar in 90 seconds, that was entertaining. That was entertaining. That was good. And then the co-main event. You know, the co-main event is just as important as the main event. Sean Strickland, Paulo Costa. Maybe the worst decision, by the way. Split decision. I mean, worst judges scorecard of 49-46 for Paulo Costa. But just so boring. I mean, let me just tell you. I'm going to read you the significant strikes. 182 to 158. Nothing was significant. Neither guy was swelling. Neither guy was bleeding. It was a glorified sparring matchup. It was so boring. It sucked all the energy out of the New Jersey crowd, and it was just excruciating to sit through. Now, the main event is on Makhachev, Dustin Poirier. We've already gone through and ranked title fights. We've looked at the UFC 2024 in review. We know how good this was. So as good as this was, it just wasn't enough to save this card. But Islam Makhachev, Dustin Poirier, a perfect, perfect fight right there. The story that it was telling, the fight itself, the finish, it was phenomenal. So I think that one is good as a whole. Not the pay-per-view wasn't good as a whole, but that main event as a whole was perfect. Unfortunately, everything else, not good enough, and it ended up being the worst pay-per-view of the year, which is weird to say, because, you know, it doesn't feel like it was the worst, but at the same time, not a good amount of fights as a whole. This is where we get controversial. Number 13, UFC 306, otherwise known as Riyadh Season Noche UFC, coming to you from the Sphere in Las Vegas, September 14th. And I will stand by that no matter how good the Sphere is as a venue, the fights on this did not deliver to the highest of expectations. And part of this boils down to our two final title fights being the co-main and main event. So from the get-go, you know, Raul Rosas Jr., fighting Al Gorquin, you know, with Roberto Russos Jr., we have to remember he's a 19-year-old. Not all these fights are going to be that easy for them. This one proved to be the case. Joshua Van Eger-Sherez, interesting to an extent, but yet again, another decision. You then get your two finishes of the night. Ketlin Souza over Yasmin Jeraguay. Didn't see that one coming. Ignacio Bahomanes over Manuel Torres. Didn't see that one coming. Those were interesting. Norma Dumont and Irene Aldana, way more one-sided than anyone expected. The main card. Ronaldo Rodriguez, Aude Osborne. Still don't know how this was on the main card. Still perplexed. A run-of-the-mill decision. Run-of-the-mill decision. Then you have a fight of the night. You know, Esteban Rivovic, Daniel Zuluber. Not just fight of the night, your fight of the year. That should have been the main event in hindsight. That was phenomenal. That was fantastic. I love that fight. That fight was fantastic. Following that, Diego Lopez, Brian Ortega. You know, the only issue with this is that Ortega's tough. It's almost impossible to finish Brian Ortega, and we learned that from Diego Lopez. Now, there was a moment in round one where Diego Lopez knocked out Brian Ortega, and in the same motion where he knocked him out, the second punch he landed actually woke him up, which was funny enough. But yet again, another decision. We then have to sit through 50 minutes for co-main and main event combined. 50 minutes of grappling. 50 minutes of grappling. Now, mind you, that's how long a full five-round fight is. It's 25 minutes for each fight. Combined, ladies and gentlemen, we had 17 minutes of grappling in the co-main event, and we had 10 minutes, okay? So that means you have almost half an hour out of the final hour of actual fighting time being grappling. Merab, Valentina, one-side decisions, both to become the new champions. And one thing I do want to point out, and if you want to consider Diego Lopez and Raul Rosas Jr. as Mexican fighters, they're the only ones that actually won. In terms of Mexican fighters, you have Alexa Grasso losing. You have Brian Ortega losing. You have Daniel Zuluber. You have Irene Aldana. You have Manuel Torres, Yasmin Jeraguay, Edgar Shrez. Almost every Mexican fighter lost on this card. And when it was all said and done, I won't lie, the main event and co-main event is the real reason this event just didn't hit for me. And, you know, this is a personal list. It comes in at 13. That's just where it's at. At number 12, we do have UFC 307, which, you know, to UFC 307's credit, was thrown together last minute. Coming at you October 5th from Salt Lake City, Utah. The main event, Alex Barra versus Khalil Roundtree Jr. Fight of the night, one of my favorite fights of the year. It has aged so well. You know, I went back and rewatched it. It is as good as it was the first time around that I watched it. It is so good. Now the rest of the card. Okay, the rest of the card, it has its issues. But, you know, when we go through the prelims, Court McGee's Ming Team Mings in front of his home crowd, his first submission win of his career, I'm pretty sure. Amazing. Chisha Pendleton, Carla Esparza, I think it was a bad decision. I think it was a bad fight. That was dull. Ryan Spann submitting Ovince St. Preux in 95 seconds. That was entertaining. I like that. Cesar Almeida, Iro Portero, one of the weirdest decision fights ever. So many fouls in that. Just a mess. Hernandez and Hubbard, run-of-the-mill lightweight decision. Lucindo Marina Rodriguez, I did not think Yasmin Lucindo won this personally. But, you know, that's what happens when it goes to a decision. Joaquin Buckley knocking out Wonderboy Thompson. That was insane. That was insane. That was a good moment right there. I was really, really happy with that. The main card, Kayla Harrison, Kelvin Vieira, just doesn't deliver. You know, we know how good Kayla Harrison is, but sometimes it's tougher for her to finish fights. That happened here. You then have Roman Dolidze, Kevin Holland. Kevin Holland gets injured. Kevin Holland gets injured. That one's unfortunate. Mario Bautista, Jose Aldo, one of the worst decisions to fans. You know, I picked Mario Bautista, so I wasn't too upset, but everyone's still pissed about that. And then Julia Pena, Joaquin Pinto, co-main event is as boring as you could get for a five-round decision. I'm sorry for laughing, but it was just, like, comically bad. Like, you're just like, you know, the women's bantamweight division, we'll give them a chance, okay? We should never give them a chance. It just wasn't interesting at all. And like I said, Pera Roundtree, such a perfect way to cap off the evening. You know, it comes in at 12 just because of some stronger prelims, okay, overall, and how good the main event was. You know, UFC 302, the only good part was the main event. Nothing else could save it. UFC 306, the prelims were better than the main card, which will always be kind of painful. And for this one, it's kind of spread out where you have some good finishes here and there. So it lands at 12, but to the circumstances being that Alex Barrera fighting for the third time this year, really saving another event, that's where it lands for us. Coming in at number 11, we do have UFC 304, which I think is going to be a lot of people's worst pay-per-view of the year, but it's saved by some good moments. Mind you, this is taking place at 5 in the morning for Great Britain time. Okay, so this is taking place from the hours, I'm pretty sure, of 2 to 7 in total for the entire event. And mind you, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 fights. 14 fights. Out of those 14 fights, only 5 finishes. Out of those 14 fights, only 5 finishes. That is going to lead to a long, boring card. But, it starts off, your run-of-the-mill women's split decision fight. Kind of boring. Then Mick Parkin, the hometown heavyweight boy. My prediction for having the biggest rise in the heavyweight division in 2025. Mick Parkin, the young up-and-comer, gets his first finish in the UFC, a round one TKO. Performance of the night. Good stuff. After that, round one submission. Sam Pearson over Kiefer Crosby. We love these finishes. We kept it rolling. Modestus Bukauskas in a weird fight against Marcin Prochniak gets the round three finish. That was entertaining. We then go on. One of the most brutal streaks. You get 7 straight decisions, and not a single one of them are entertaining. You know, Muhammad Mokaev Menelkaip under-delivered to such an extreme level that the winner, Muhammad Mokaev, was cut, and Menelkaip, the loser, is now on the verge of a title shot. That's how bad it was. Jake Hadley, Callum Lorraine, it just showed that there are levels to the UFC, and some guys aren't there. And the winner, Jake Hadley, I don't even think he was really there. Bruna Brazil, Molly McCann, you see Molly McCann lose another fight. She is just, I don't really want to call her overrated. I just think she has a place, skill level-wise, and it's just nowhere near the top 15. Nathaniel Wood, Daniel Pineda, interesting to an extent, but it was almost one of those fights where Nathaniel Wood should have gotten the finish, and Daniel Pineda almost rallied, so it was like, okay. We get into the main card. Arnold Allen, Giga Chikadze, it's a sparring match. It's a 3-round Sean Strickland, Paul Costa fight, let me tell you that. Gregory Rodriguez, Christian Leroy Duncan, just kind of odd. You know, I feel like Gregory should have gotten him out of there, but instead he leaned on the grappling in that one. Kind of boring, but what saves this fight, what saves this card is the third fight on the main card and the co-main event. Paddy Pimblett and Tom Aspinall carried this card from the 14th worst to the number 11 pay-per-view of the year. I mean, Paddy Pimblett submitting Bobby Green in 3 minutes and 22 seconds, it just proved Paddy's legit. Paddy is legit as it comes, and it shows that that Jared Gordon fight was a fluke, the Tony Ferguson fight he was actually injured in, and here we have him fighting Bobby Green. He fights smart. He lets Bobby Green take him down, wraps up an arm triangle, which leads into an arm bar, I'm pretty sure, and that was wraps. We then get to the co-main event, and, you know, the thing with Tom Aspinall, and this is why I'm predicting Tom Aspinall to beat John Jones, okay? And is it out of hatred for John Jones? Absolutely not. Is that the fact that, you know, we always say, like, okay, Tom Aspinall has won, like, almost all of his fights in the first minute, just knocking guys out. And when he does it again, especially against Curtis Blaydes, you're kind of just at a point where, like, it's just who he is. He's this freaking good. And it had the crowd lit up. Okay, this place was on fire. Mind you, they've been here for hours. Okay, the UK crowd has been there for hours. They're sick of this. And Tom Aspinall is rejuvenating them. Now, Paddy Pimblett and Tom Aspinall can only take a card so far, as Bilal Muhammad and Leon Edwards was exactly what we expected, and almost worse. Almost worse. It's just Bilal Muhammad out-grappling Leon Edwards. That's all the fight is, okay? Now, you get a sprinkle towards, I'd say round 4 and 3, maybe round 4 and 3. You see a little life from Leon Edwards, but, you know, it was too little too late. He didn't do enough, and just another fight where it ends with just grappling to end the show. And I will stand by this. You know, I understand it's MMA, but just because it's MMA, just because I understand grappling is a part of it, doesn't mean I have to be interested in 5-round grappling in championship fights when I've had to sit through a whole card, okay? I want to show you some. Islam Makhachev, Dustin Poirier, that's an interesting grappling fight because it shows Dustin Poirier overcoming it with striking. You can say UFC 297, you know, Justus Du Plessis grappling against Sean Strickland. That's interesting because DDP is trying to win points through the takedowns, and he's not even going for control. He's going for a finish. So, Bilal Muhammad, Leon Edwards, we've already discussed it. It's one of the most boring UFC main events of the year. And just all the stipulations around this London card, we're rooting for it to fail. And, you know, it did what it could, but it does land at number 11 on our list. Get into it with number 10. It was the first UFC pay-per-view of 2024 as we had Sean Strickland versus Justus Du Plessis in Toronto, Ontario, Canada on January 20th. And this one, similar to the Mexican style card, almost every Canadian lost on this event. Almost every Canadian lost on this event. And it started with so much potential. It really did, you know. You got Jimmy Flick getting dominated in round one to only come out and submit Malcolm Gordon at the start of round two. That was interesting. You saw Jasmine Jasu Davicius run through Priscilla Castroneda in such a dominant fashion in the 14 minutes and 21 seconds this fight lasted. 326 total strikes landed for Jasu DeVicious. I've never seen, you know, her last name's Jasu DeVicious. She is so vicious. Okay, I thought she was going to kill Priscilla Castroneda in this fight. It was so dominant. Sam Patterson submitting Johan Lennes. Another round one finish. Jillian Robertson TKOing Poliana Viana. So shocking because everyone had bet Jillian Robertson to get the submission. And the submission was right there. And she said, nah, I'm going for the TKO. And she pounded Poliana Viana's face into the canvas. Domination. You then have five fights. Five fights in a row. Three of them split decisions. And out of those, I'll say Mosfer Evlov versus Arnold Allen was the only entertaining one. Roman Tavares, Sergey Sadeh, just a competitive fight between two young up-and-comers. Sean Woodson, Charles Jourdain, it is so painful to watch Charles Jourdain in front of his home country of Canada just get outstruck. But we know how good Sean Woodson is, but still not that fun to watch. Garrett Armfield, Brad Katona, just kind of a run-of-the-mill decision. Mosfer Evlov, Arnold Allen, great fight right there. That was somewhat interesting. Not fight of the night, but interesting to an extent. Chris Curtis, Marc-Andre Barriot. It's like you're sparring with your buddy. It's like you're sparring with your buddy, and yeah, you guys land some hard hits, but nothing enough to knock each other out. So that one goes to another split decision. Neil Magny, Mike Mallett. Let me tell you, Mike Mallett was on the verge of the top 15. He is winning this fight. He's up 2.5 rounds. He gets TKO'd with 15 seconds left. And just the worst gassing out. Biggest comeback of the year. It almost won my biggest comeback of the year. But always funny when Neil Magny does that to young up-and-comers. Hakuel Penta, Maribel Silva, one of the worst women's title fights of the year. You could say it's the worst of the year. It is so, so boring. So bad. There is hardly any drive for either of these women to get a finish. They were both gassed out. I feel sorry for the crowd. Now, the main event, DDP Sean Strickland, one fight of the night. It was our first fight of the night. I'd say for the first, you know, month or two of the year, it was your fight of the year. It was very entertaining. But as a whole, you know, this Canadian card, it was really lacking. And I hope when we go back to Canada in 2025, we really beef up these cards. Because historically, they don't really do a good job. But also, we don't have a GSP anymore. There's no real Canadian stud to really carry these cards. So I can see them working with what they have. But 297 lands at number 10. You know, like a lot of these, it had to work with what it had. Coming at you, number 9, UFC 303. And UFC 303 is pretty similar to a lot of these cards where they're thrown together last minute. This was supposed to be the Conor McGregor-Michael Chandler card. Instead, you have Alex Pereira and Jiří Procházka stepping up to save another pay-per-view. And as we all know, one of the best finishes of the year with Alex Pereira and Jiří Procházka. Now, the only issue is that, you know, there were some duds here and there. You know, as fun as it is that Dan Ige stepped in on 4 hours' notice to fight Diego Lopez, it's not an interesting fight. Roman Dolidze Anthony Smith was originally supposed to be Jamahal Hill versus Khalil Roundtree Jr. It's crazy you wound up with Roman Dolidze Anthony Smith. How did you get there? Jamahal Hill pulled out. Khalil Roundtree Jr. pulled out. Carlos Ulberg steps in. Jamahal Hill pulls out. Anthony Smith steps in. Carlos Ulberg steps out. In steps Roman Dolidze. That's just a run-of-the-mill light heavyweight 3-round decision fight. Not that entertaining. Macy Chiasson beating Mara Bueno Silva. It won a performance bonus, but nothing to go home and tell your kids about. Ian Garry, MVP. Such an underwhelming fight. It was painful to watch. But then you have Joe Pyfer getting a nasty faceplant knockout over Marc-Andre Barriot. You have Andre Fili and Cub Swanson having a fight of the night split decision. Talk about Cub Swanson going out on a limb in 2024 with two fight of the year contenders. So entertaining. Gene Silva knocking out Charles Jourdain. Super exciting. How about Peyton Talbot's 19-second knockout? That was entertaining. He then had four decisions to open the card too, especially in fights where, you know, Vinicius Oliveira over Ricky Simon, you expected a knockout. Ray Tazura over Carlos Hernandez, you expect a submission. Martin Boudet over Andre Arlovski, no, that fight never should have happened. And Jillian Robertson against Michelle Warson Gomez, you know, Jillian did all she could to finish Michelle, but it takes two to tango, and when Michelle just isn't game, you know, Jillian's going to dominate. So it wasn't bad overall, you know, just a couple duds here and there, but I'll say the better moments of this card outweigh the duller moments of this card. It comes in at number 9, not that bad of an event all around. Coming at you for number 8, you have UFC 301. UFC 301, Alexander Pantoa versus Steve Ersig. Coming at you May 4th from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. This was entertaining. This was surprisingly entertaining. And the reason it was surprisingly entertaining is because it was understacked. It was very understacked. There was not a lot of star power on this card. And it still delivered with what it had. You know, we kick things going. Prelims, you know, nothing too exciting, but you do have Mauricio Ruffi's debut knocking out Jamie Mullarkey. That's entertaining. You have Alexandro Costa running through Kevin Burhos, TKOing him. You have Mike DeBeck, Oral Bayan, and Elvis Brenner giving us an entertaining fight. Yasmin Lucindo proving she's legit, jumping into the top 15. Then you have Johannerson Brito beating Jack Shore with a leg kick TKO where he busted open his leg. And one of the weirdest things, he busted open his leg was bleeding, and they stopped the fight. Such a random stoppage. Main card, really can't get much better than that with what you had. Cal Barallo knocking out Paul Craig, very entertaining. Michelle Pereira getting a 54-second guillotine choke of Ira Patera. That Michelle Pereira 7-fight win streak run, that's one of my favorite winning streaks of all time. Anthony Smith defeating the undefeated up-and-comer Vitor Petrino. Never gets old, pulling the old Neil Magny, beating an undefeated up-and-comer. Jose Aldo, his 2-year return, takes on Jonathan Martinez. Actually an entertaining fight if you're a Jose Aldo fan. Then the main event, Alexander Pantoa, Steve Ursic. You almost saw one of the craziest upsets from the number 9 ranked Steve Ursic. Gained a title shot after knocking out Matt Schnell. Almost beats Pantoa. Unfortunately, grappling rules at times, and Pantoa gets it done. You know, for our one pay-per-view in Brazil this year, it was very understacked, but it over-delivered. So, very pleased with UFC 301. And number 7, UFC 310. This was our final pay-per-view of the year, and I'll say the one issue with this card, the one issue, because there was a lot of finishes, a lot of good, is that when the main event was over, it felt like we needed one more fight. You know, the main event didn't feel like it was the main event. Alexander Pantoa, Kaya Sakura, it just didn't feel like the main event. And, you know, Pantoa winning a performance bonus for just grabbing Kaya Sakura and submitting him 2 minutes into round number 2, it was somewhat entertaining, but it went by so fast, and you were kind of like, oh, that's it. The event is over. As for the rest of the card, Shafkat Ihangiri, you know, I hate to say it underperformed, but there were some injuries. It just shows how high level these guys were, and it was just so technical. It was a game of chess at times that it's kind of, I hate to call it bad, but it wasn't as entertaining as we expected. Ciryl Volkov, you know, a lot of people say it's one of the worst decisions of the year. I scored it for Ciryl Gane, 29-28. Don't come at me. But people are still mad to this day. In fact, they're trying to say that Volkov and Pereira are fighting for an interim heavyweight championship. Imagine that. That would be crazy. Cron Gracie, Bryce Mitchell, you know, you get a bunch of grappling. Then finally, Bryce Mitchell TKOs him 39 seconds into round 3. Duhu Choi, Nate Landwehr. It's Duhu Choi grappling Nate Landwehr, then TKOing him. Nothing too entertaining. Dominic Reyes just running through Anthony Smith was kind of bittersweet because Dominic Reyes literally was the only one throwing strikes, 121 significant strikes to 21, including this outrageous stat in round 2 where you had 73 significant strikes landed, 119 total strikes landed, 2-0 thrown for Anthony Smith. No idea how the fight even made it to the end of round 2. Vicente Luque submitting Kazuma Garimbo in 52 seconds, very entertaining. Mosfer Evlov, Aljamain Sterling, you know, for just pure grappling, very entertaining, very entertaining. Brian Battle, Randy Brown kind of under-delivered. Chris Weidman getting TKO'd by Eric Anders after knocking down Eric Anders. Oh, man, just frustrating to watch. Joshua Van Bee and Cody Durden, I love. Michael Chiesa submitting Max Griffin was entertaining. Chase Hooper's round one finish. Kayan Chukwe's round one finish. You had a lot of good moments on this card. The only negative comment I have, really, is that the main event, when it ended, it didn't feel like it was the main event. But UFC 310, pretty good overall. And number 6, you have 298. Number 6 is UFC 298. It was the second pay-per-view of the year, and it had Alexander Volkanovski taking on Ian Topura in the main event. Overall, just a lot of good moments on this card. Just a lot of good moments. You know, prelims, somewhat interesting stuff. You know, you get some finishes from Zhang Mingyang, Danny Barlow, Marco Rogeros de Lima. You have a fight of the year contender off the bat. Fight of the night is Amanda Lemos versus Mackenzie Dern, which is one of the best women's fights I've ever watched. It was insane. You know, and when you look at the stats, you're like, oh, only 41 significant strikes landed to 21. I have no idea how the stats are so low, but watching this live, it was insane. The amount of times both women almost beat each other, it was crazy. I was very surprised with that. The main card, it was pretty good. The main card was pretty good. You know, Alexander Hernandez beating Roman Kopylov, very entertaining performance of the bonus right off the bat. Mirabin Cejudo, very, very surprising. Very technical. Watching Mirab out-grapple Cejudo was very surprising. It was a very intriguing fight right there. Ian Gary, Jeff Neal, you know, Ian Gary's going to get some finishes here and there. He's also going to have a lot of technical fights. This was a technical striking fight, and the fact it went to a split decision made absolutely no sense. I have no idea why it was a split decision, but that was okay. We then had what I felt should have been fight of the night, Robert Whittaker, Paulo Costa. Don't be fooled by the Robert Whittaker who got submitted by Hamzat Chimaev and the Paulo Costa who fought Sean Strickland. These two looked like they were in their prime, looked like they knew what they were doing, and some spinning kicks from Paulo Costa, some upper kicks, some head kicks from Robert Whittaker. This was a fantastic fight. And when it went to the scorecard, you were like, I think Whittaker would, but maybe Paulo Costa will get a split decision. It was entertaining, perfect stuff, and it led us perfectly into the knockout of Vitor Pereira over Volkanovski, one of the craziest upsets we've seen. And the crazy thing is that it was topped later in the year, but 298 from Anaheim, California, February 17th, it delivered. It delivered, and once it was over, you're kind of like, okay, that felt like a fulfilling pay-per-view with a fulfilling result, and it was good. That's where it lands. Get into our top five. At number five is UFC 309 from Madison Square Garden. And when they load it up as they do, you know, when they have John Jones versus Stipe as the main event, you know, they got to deliver. Okay. And as much as like the card wasn't, you know, the most stacked, we had some good moments, you know, women's decision fight to open up the card. Then Oban Elliott's knockout of Basile Hafez. Oh, so good. Then how about topping that with Ramiz Brahaj knocking out Mickey Gahal? So good. After that, Marcin Tybura humbling the undefeated Hinata Diaz, TKOing him in brutal fashion. Love that. The underrated fight between David Onama and Roberto Romero. Okay, holy cow. Roberto Romero stepping on short notice to take on the absolute savage that is David Onama. And it goes all three rounds, and they both land knockdowns, and they both have combined over 300, almost 400 strikes. It was crazy. Then, following that, how about Jim Miller getting another submission win in his career? I just love Jim Miller. Love watching him fight. Marcus McGee, Jonathan Martinez, you know, fun if you're a Marcus McGee fan like myself, but if you're watching that for Jonathan Martinez, he just didn't show up. Main card gets going, you know, Mauricio Ruffy probably should have finished James Lontop, but James Lontop would not go away easily. Fun fight to start. Vivian Aruja, Karin Silva, didn't deliver that much. Bo Nickel, Paul Craig, we all know how boring that was. But then, Charles Oliveira, Michael Chandler. I mean, I've never lost my mind more over a fight than this. The amount of times I thought Charles was going to win and Michael Chandler escaped the jaws of defeat. And then round five gets going, and I have no idea how Charles Oliveira does it. But he just survives every headshot that Michael Chandler gives him. He's getting his face bashed in the back of his head. He's still surviving that. He ends the fight body slamming Michael Chandler. No, Chandler was slamming Oliveira with him on his back multiple times. I mean, let me tell you, Michael Chandler can't win a fight to save his life, but he is so entertaining. And Charles Oliveira won. It was a beautiful, beautiful fight right there. And it led into John Jones versus Stipe. And I mean, you know, we knew John would run through Stipe, but, you know, the fact of what he did in round one, you know, it got a bit more competitive in round two. And then him finishing him in round three was a good way to end the night. Honestly, it ended as a perfect card. You know, the only doozy I'd say is you have your stretch where you have five decisions. Then you even have the stretch where you have one out of eight fights as a finish. It, you know, it adds up. So you kind of need a balance between good decisions and good, you know, finishes. So overall, 309, number five pay-per-view of the year, the good heavily outweighs the bad. And number four, this one, so surprising. UFC 305 coming at you from Perth, Western Australia, August 17th. I mean, this one took me by surprise. This one really did, you know. Open up the prelims. Decent stuff. You know, you're getting a round one guillotine choke from Jesus Aguilera. You get Song Kinan winning a fight in 2024. What in the world? You have Jack Jenkins TKO and Herbert Burns finally sending him packing. You have Walter Walker getting kind of a weird TKO of, you know, our submission over Junior Tafa. Okay, that was all okay. But then we get to the main card. And the main card, four out of the five fights were amazing. All right, we open it up. Carlos Prates knocking out Li Jingliang. So bittersweet. We all love you, Li Jingliang. But Carlos Prates, there's just steel in those fists. He has a brass knux in those fists. He has to. So, so dominant. After that, you know, Jairzinho Rosa threw Taito Iwasa. Obviously, it sucked. Obviously, it was bad. We'll skip over it, okay? But then Dan Hooker, Matheus Gamrot, giving us potentially the number four, number three. You could even say it could be fight of the year. Just two guys who are doing everything in their power to win. Goes to the judges' scorecards. Either man could have won it. They give it to Dan Hooker. Such a feel-good moment. Following that, Kai Kara-France He just has some power in those fists, knocking out Steve Hrsic, dropping him over and over, finishing him in round number one with a knockout punch. It was beautiful to see, especially in front of his home nation, you know, Australia, New Zealand. I group them together when we go overseas for the UFC. Such a feel-good moment for him. And then I told everyone, DDP is going to finish Adesanya. He's going to submit him. I called it. I said round three. Okay, so I was a round off. But when he did it in round four, it was still crazy to see. You know, the whole moment where Adesanya is backed up against the cage, he's telling him to bring it. DDP just lands an insane hook, clips him right on the chin. He goes wobbling, down he goes. DDP perfectly wraps him up, takes his back, and submits him. It was such a good moment. UFC 305, no one's really going to remember this pay-per-view, but I'm going to remember you, UFC 305. You have a special place in my heart, you know. You'd be going crazy at the bar. I lost all interest in alcohol. I was all locked in on this pay-per-view. Coming at you. For number three pay-per-view of the year. It's crazy because it was your third pay-per-view of the year. It was just so good. It was so good, you know. The 3-2-1, I could tie them all. They were all fantastic, but UFC 299, Sean O'Malley versus Marlon Vera 2, the rematch. Overall, just so many good moments on this card, you know. Couple boring decisions to open. Then Robust Espange, 18-second knockout of Josh Parsons. Let's not look at the rest of the year for him, but right here, crazy knockout. Then Michelle Pereira, how about another round one submission in a minute? Insane. You know, couple boring decisions here and there. Then Curtis Blaydes and Halton Almeida, one of the weirdest fights you'll ever watch, okay? Round one, Halton Almeida sets the takedown, heavyweight takedown record in a round on someone by taking down Curtis Blaydes 9 times. By the way, Curtis held that record, okay? We then get into round two. Curtis Blaydes TKOs him on a takedown attempt. 36 seconds into round number two. And Curtis Blaydes wins. It was so, so funny. And then the main card. The main card. Like I said, these main cards, they make or break events. Pereira Song Yedong. It doesn't get more entertaining than that. It doesn't get more entertaining than that. So, so fun. Jack Del Malena, Gilbert Burns, comeback of the year. Okay, Jack Del Malena down 2 rounds. Finishes Gilbert Burns with just over a minute left in brutal fashion with a knee, then some elbows. Loved it. The debut of Michael Venom Page over Kevin Holland. You know, watching it live, it wasn't that bad. I won't go back and rewatch it because it's funny to see how weird Michael Page strikes. But I won't lie, it wasn't the most entertaining. You know, Kevin Holland kept getting pissed that Michael Page fights weird. But then, the co-main event. Dustin Poirier, Benoit St. Denis. I mean, it could be fight of the year. Okay, it was insane watching Dustin Poirier almost get defeated by Benoit Saint-Denis. He kept jumping the guillotine, and then out of nowhere in round two, he clips Benoit, almost drops him, and then he clips him again and knocks him out. It was just cinematic, I could almost call it. I loved it. It was so entertaining, and I was like, wow, that could be the end of the evening. And then we get to the main event, and Sean O'Malley, Marlon Vera, I brought up when I ranked my title fights of the year, and on the year-end review, I've said it. But it's just so random where you get one fight where it's a 50-45, one fighter, the champion is just dominating the contender, and it's entertaining. And watching Sean O'Malley just piece up Marlon Vera, the only man up to that point who had actually defeated him on his record, it was insane to watch. 230 significant strikes landed to 89, and we all remember that knee. We all remember that knee where we're like, Marlon Vera's jaw has to be broken. And by the time it was said and done, I was on my feet clapping. I had to give a round of applause. It was phenomenal. It was phenomenal. It was entertaining. And man, UFC 299, up to that point, I was debating putting it ahead of UFC 300. But, you know, we still had to witness UFC 300 before we could do that. But UFC 299, fantastic. Coming in at number two is UFC 308. The context for UFC 308 is that this was the most loaded card besides UFC 300 of the entire year. And this card not only delivered, okay, but it had everyone on their feet applauding. It was just from top to bottom worked. From top to bottom worked. You know, we get it going. Couple decisions. But then we get into some finishes. Kenny and Chukwu against Chris Barnett. Dominant finish. Abus Magomedov submitting Bruno Ferreira. No one really saw that one coming. Matheus Rebeke, Metekabek Orobai, probably giving us the number two. Debatable for number one fight of the year. I mean, it was actually a historical gladiator battle between Matheus Rebeke and Metekabek Orobai. It was fantastic. Jeff Dielfish and Rafael dos Anjos, bittersweet. Bittersweet, but yet again, another knockout. And who doesn't love a little knockout in the UFC? Following that, how about a 51-second knockout from Ibel Azan over Rafael Sequeira? I mean, oh my gosh. Ibel Azan is, of course, my prediction to have the biggest rise in the men's light heavyweight division, and it started here. After that, you know, we're getting into the main card. Shurmagomedov, his double spinning back fist. I mean, no one's done it before in the UFC, and I doubt anyone will do it since. Shurmagomedov, love you. After that, Leron Murphy, Dan Ige. What an entertaining competitive fight. And this was a matchup where it comes down to round three, and it's whoever has the most grit. And Leron Murphy just barely edges out Dan Ige. Dan Ige, just one of those fighters where he keeps losing, but almost at every loss, he even looks better than he did before. Kind of a weird thing to say. After that, Magomedov, Kalayev, Alexander Rockets, you know, a technical fight, a competitive fight, but nothing too interesting, you know, I'll say. But, you know, it wasn't bad. It wasn't awful. And then, I think I could say this is the best main event and co-main event combination of the entire year. For either a pay-per-view or a fight night or any promotion across the world, this is the best co-main and main event combination. The co-main event, Khamzat Chimaev, Robert Whittaker. It's one thing to predict Khamzat Chimaev will submit Robert Whittaker in round one. It's another thing to see it. Just watching Khamzat run through Robert Whittaker, it was, I was speechless. I was speechless. I'm like, oh my gosh, he actually took him down on his first takedown attempt. Then, okay, Whittaker's back up. Oh, he defended another takedown. Oh, he's taking back down. Oh, he's got to squeeze in. And oh my gosh, Whittaker tapped right away. I was going nuts. It was insane to see. And the fact that he absolutely shattered, okay, the bottom teeth and jaw of Robert Whittaker, that squeeze of Khamzat is deadly. And also, the fact that he isn't getting a title shot right now, what's going on with that? All right, what are we doing with Khamzat, guys? He's clearly the best middleweight in the world. All right, let's give him a title shot, but so exciting. And this is what a co-main event is supposed to be. It's supposed to get you excited for the main event. It's supposed to get the blood pumping, and that's exactly what this gave us. But that wasn't it, folks. No. That was only the first of our final two fights. We then had Ilia Topuria versus Max Holloway, and similar to what I said, it's one thing to predict Ilia Topuria will knock out Max Holloway in round number three. It is one thing to predict that, which we did. We nailed the exact round. It's another thing to see it. I mean, are you kidding me? Max Holloway's never been dropped. Max Holloway's never been knocked down. Okay, he's only been finished like once in his entire career by submission, and here we have Ilia Topuria. Okay, here we have Ilia Topuria. We know how good he is. He just knocked out Volkanovski, and he knocks out Max Holloway. Are you kidding me? Insane. I was in a crowd, all right? It was University of Minnesota's homecoming. I was there with a couple of my buddies, and we're outside this pavilion, and, you know, everyone's just drinking. They're talking to each other, and I'm on my phone with this big crowd of people watching this on my phone, and it happens, and everyone's just acting casual. I'm like, what am I supposed to do? This is one of the craziest knockouts I've ever seen live. I predicted it would happen. What am I supposed to do? I'm just going crazy. I'm just, like, slapping everyone. I'm going, oh, my gosh. And it was amazing. It was amazing. Ilia Topuria knocked out Max Holloway. UFC 308, top to bottom, you know. This is a card that, unlike UFC 300, which we're going to get to in a second, but unlike UFC 300, this wasn't necessarily stacked on purpose. This just came together and gelled well. Of course, this one went down Abu Dhabi, October 26th. Oh my gosh. UFC 308. Fantastic. It gets a standing round of applause as it comes in at number two for our pay-per-views of 2024. Now, when I wanted to pick a number one pay-per-view, I really tried to find it. But, you know, UFC 299, fantastic. UFC 308, fantastic. But nothing's going to top this. Nothing will come close for a while. This is the most stacked card the UFC has ever put together. It'll probably be the most stacked pay-per-view they'll ever put together. I don't see them ever redoing this for a while. Maybe UFC 400, 350. I don't know, but UFC 300, April 13th from Las Vegas, obviously, your pay-per-view of the year, event of the year. It just, nothing's stopping it. Nothing's stopping it. Top to bottom, fantastic fights. I mean, where to begin? Your opening prelim is Deiveson Figueiredo versus Cody Garbrandt. Come on. You're going to have Bobby Green, Jim Miller. You're going to have Jessica Andrade, Marina Rodriguez. You have Renato Moicano and Jalen Turner in a fight Jalen Turner should have won, but his own cockiness got the better of him as he tried to land a knock walk-off KO. Yeah, that didn't work. How about next up, Diego Lopez knocking out Sadiq Youssef in a minute 29. If you hadn't been taking Diego serious yet, now you were. The debut of Kayla Harrison over Holly Holmes, dominating her 51 significant strikes. The only two she submits her 2 minutes into round number two. Aljamain Sterling grappling Calvin Kattar. Probably that was probably the worst moment of the night. the worst fight, you know, Sterling and Cater. It was literally Calvin Cater being unable to defend takedowns against Sterling, and we already know Sterling's game plan. The final prelim, Jiří Procházka, Alexander Rakicio, give it fight of the night. Give it TKO of the night. I mean, oh my gosh, performance of the night it was given, but that was crazy. You know, it was your typical performance. You know, Jiří's getting pieced up in round one, comes back in round two, and just knocks out his opponent. And I mean, Rakic, unfortunate to see, but Jiří Procházka, so entertaining. We get the main card going. We all knew Bo Nickel shouldn't have been on the main card, but, you know, he did what he had to do. Submits Cody Brundage round two. You know, I expected a bit more out of him, but he got the finish. What more could you ask for? You then have the just insane technical fight where any moment could have lost the fight between Arben Saruqi and Charles Oliveira, where you have Charles clearly winning round one. You then have Arben clearly winning round two. You then have legit a 50-50 split round three. It's like whoever they call to be the winner, like, no one's going to complain. It's given to Arben. It felt right. Arben's getting his rematch against Islam. And talk about Oliveira. He beat Michael Chandler. He may be getting to fight the winner of that fight. So this was a technical fight. It won't win fight of the night, but it was entertaining to watch. It was so tense. Like, you're like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? Following that, I mean, Max Holloway just engaged you the BMF title fight. What more do you want me to say? But greatest knockout of the year. It won fight of the night, but honestly, it wasn't that exciting of a fight overall. It was Max Holloway just piecing up Justin Gaethje the entire fight, and then he hits him with the greatest knockout I've probably ever seen live. I literally lost my voice screaming. It was insane. Of course it's knockout of the year. Okay, of course it's as fantastic as people say. It personified what UFC 300 was. Once in a lifetime. You get a once in a lifetime KO just like that. Co-main event, Zhang Weili, Yan Xiaonan, super unnecessary, you know, and for a fight that was, it had so much potential, but I won't lie, after Zhang Weili almost kept getting knocked out, all right, she leaned on the grappling in rounds 4 and 5, and it kind of just dampened the mood, you know, kind of just sucked the energy out of the arena, but it wasn't awful, okay, it wasn't awful, just wasn't good, okay. Now the main event, I mean, it doesn't get more perfect than that. Now, this should have won a performance bonus. The only reason it didn't is because the performance bonuses were $300,000. So they were only giving out two. But I mean, Alex Pereira, Jamahal Hill, we've talked about this moment. You've seen it all the time. Jamahal Hill, nut shots Alex Pereira. Herb goes to stop it. Pereira waves him up. Daps off Jamahal Hill. Jamahal throws. Pereira ducks. Hits him with the hook. Knocks him out. Little couple grounded pounds, and that's that. I mean, it was Alex Pereira's first title win of the year. I mean, it personified how good of the year he was going to have. He won Fight of the Year, for gosh sakes. And, man, UFC 300, easily the best event of the year. But as I've gone through this, you know, I do want to say the UFC did a great job this year. Okay, the UFC did a great job. The bad always outweighed the good on all these events. You know, UFC 302, everything sucked. The pay-per-view delivered. UFC 306, the main event, co-main event, under-delivered. But it was at the Sphere. It was insane. You know, UFC 307... not the most exciting stuff throughout the whole card. The main event delivered. UFC 304, you had Paddy Pimblett and Tom Aspinall carrying the way. UFC 297, the main event's a fight of the year, okay? Contender at the start of the year. Towards the end of the year, it didn't age as well, but entertaining. UFC 303, crazy knockout in the main event. UFC 301, the entire main card was pretty good. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Fantastic stuff, UFC, and I can't wait to come back in 2025 and rank every pay-per-view we just saw. But that's all we got for ranking our pay-per-views in 2024. But we have to look forward to this year. Okay, guys, we're in 2025, and we actually have some new stuff coming at you this weekend in terms of the NFL as the playoffs are kicking off with the wild card games. We have 6 games for you. We're going to drop our predictions for each one right now. So first off, Saturday, January 11th, you get 2 of your AFC wildcard games kicking off at 3:30. Los Angeles Chargers visit the Houston Texans. Now, Chargers 11-6, Texans 10-7. This one's really, really tricky because I could see any outcome here. Really, I could see any outcome out of this matchup, if I'm being honest. You know, the Texans didn't have the most mind-blowing season. You know, 10-7, they just happen to be in one of the worst divisions. You know, when you're facing the Jaguars, Titans, or Colts, those are some easy wins to get around. For the Chargers, you know, you got the Chiefs, you got the Broncos. You know, AFC West gave us 3 of the 4 making the playoffs. So it really just shows the difference in how good these were. For the Texans, they won their wild card game last year with CJ Stroud, which is kind of what this team is now. 45-14, blew out the Browns, then get blown out 34-10 over the Ravens. So Texans, under CJ Stroud, do have a bit of playoff experience, but, you know, it was projected he would have a sophomore slump, and we kind of saw that, you know, fantasy-wise, definitely underperformed, but you have to understand, lost Stephon Diggs, lost Tank Dell, Nico Collins has been doing the best he can to lead the back, lead the wide receiver core, but, you know, it's tough to do. For the Chargers, I mean, Harbaugh leading them to the playoffs in his first year, not much more you can ask for. Really not much more you can ask for. And this is a team that they haven't made the playoffs in, goodness me, I think it was 2023. Last time they made the playoffs, January 2023, they got blown out by the Jaguars. Actually, they lost by 1 point to the Jaguars in that game. So it's been a while since we saw the Chargers in the playoffs. But what I've seen so far, the run they're on, ending on a three-game winning streak, okay, doing what they needed to do, it's been impressive. And in my opinion, I just think that Harbaugh, you know, he led Michigan to a national championship. That's a playoff structure. I think he's going to translate that over. I'm going with the Chargers to beat the Texans in round number one, if you want to call that, or the wild card, as we're going to call that. Now, following that game, we're into our night game Saturday, Steelers at the Ravens. And we've seen it twice this year. Okay, we've seen this matchup twice this year. And it'll be telling to see who comes out on top here. You know, last times they played, December 21st, Ravens win 34-17 at home. Before that, they played November 17th. Steelers won 18-16 at home. So now Ravens at home. They obviously have way more momentum than the Steelers do. You know, Ravens ending their season on a four-game winning streak. Steelers ending it on a four-game losing streak. Now you have a variety of things here. One being that Lamar Jackson is known to choke in the playoffs. He is a known playoff fraud. It is insane. It is utterly insane. But last year, you know, they got a round one bye, took on the Texans in the divisional round, beat them. Okay, they then lost by 7 to go to the Super Bowl. That hurts. The year before, they lost their wild card matchup to the Bengals. Okay, lost it pretty handsomely too. Before that, they missed the playoffs. The year before, we're in 2021 now. This is the last year we'll look at in terms of Lamar. They beat the Titans in the wild card. They then get blown out by the Bills in the divisional round. So this will be a real telling performance from Lamar Jackson here. I do believe the Ravens will beat the Steelers, just because I think the Steelers have lost all momentum, and we always see this with the Steelers. I apologize, Seth, my good Steelers friend. You know, there's one point they're 10-4. Okay, they're 10-4. They were 10-3. They were 10-3 at one point, and now they're 10-7 to end the year. So that hurts. That hurts for the team. But you know what? I think this should be competitive. I think this will come down to the wire. Maybe a field goal. Maybe a final touchdown drive. But Justin Tucker, he's been missing his kicks, and if you're going to want to win this game, you're going to need to hit your kicks. So we'll go Ravens over Steelers, but I think it's going to be a pretty close matchup. After that, we get into our Sunday matchups, kicking us off at noon, Broncos at the Bills, and I have nothing much more to say. I think this Bills team, this is their year. This is their year. This is the Bills Super Bowl team. I don't want to say Stephon Diggs was a cancer, okay? I don't want to say Gabe Davis wasn't the answer, but as they've restructured their team, this almost felt like a rebuilding year and has turned into a phenomenal year. An MVP season for Josh Allen and, you know, James Cook. He has stepped up when he's needed to. Khalil Shakir is your wide receiver one. Who'd have ever thought? He's been delivering at high, high levels. Both teams coming into this fairly healthy. And the Broncos, I'll say, they blew out the Chiefs. People are going to look at that when they look at this matchup. Chiefs didn't have a single starter in that entire game. Broncos had all their starters playing. I just think Bo Nix isn't going to have the same success C.J. Stroud had this year, especially because, you know, we look at C.J. Stroud's rookie year last year. He got to play the Browns, okay? Bo Nix has to play the Bills. As much as he's playing their defense, you're also playing the offense. You play the team as a whole. You have to watch them every drive. And I think the Bills go out there, put on a class act show. And I'm not going to speak to how the divisional round goes for the Bills. But as far as the wild card is concerned, I think the Bills manhandle the Broncos and move on to the next round. Moving on to our 3:30 game, Packers at Eagles. This one just screams upset to me. And, you know, up to this point, I've given a fifth seed the win. I've given the three seed Ravens the win. I've given the two seed Bills the win. And I just know not every single high seed team is going to win. All right, and this Packers team, they demonstrated this last year. They demonstrated this last year because they're supposed to just be one and done last year. And they put up 48 points on the Cowboys at home and beat them. You know, they then lose by three to the 49ers, close game. And it's been a tumultuous season for the Packers, very up and down. You never know what you're going to get. But when they've needed to, they've strung it together here and there. For the Eagles, I'd say a similar thing. You know, Jalen Hurts going out kind of hurt, but Tanner McKee and Kenny Pickett both stepping up when they need to. Their only losses, 3 points to the Commanders, okay, in their last, I don't even know how many weeks. Actually, that was their only loss to the Commanders, I think, out of their last 10 games or something. So that was a little three-point matchup. Last season, of course, they lost. I'm trying to find it. They lost to the Buccaneers in the wild card round. But before that, you know, they had made it to the Super Bowl. They had made it all the way. They had gone an incredible run beating the Giants and the 49ers. So we'll see if they can recapture that. I'm a Packers hater. You won't catch me picking the Packers any day of the week. So we're going with the Eagles. That's our prediction. But honestly, if the Packers win, I'm not going to be shocked at all, okay? I'll just leave that right there as it is. Following that, our Sunday night football game is the Commanders visiting the Bucks, and I have the Bucks winning just because of how good they've been. They've just been on such a roll. But I don't know. Tell me about this Commanders team. I feel like the Jaden Daniels-led team can really put it together, okay? They went 12-5 this year. All right, they won a lot of close games. They've won a lot of close games. Their last loss was to the Cowboys in just shocking, shocking factor. But, I mean, blowing out the Titans, beating the Saints, beating the Eagles, beating the Falcons, beating the Cowboys, all close games, all entertaining. And I know I need to pick a lower-seeded team, but I feel like everyone's going to pick the Commanders to win this. And it's just someone like Baker Mayfield to pull off the upset, put it together, get it done. But also, I mean, look at the Buccaneers. They played a lot of tough teams, you know. Lost to the 49ers, lost to the Chiefs, lost to the Ravens, lost to the Falcons, both of them. But they also beat the Eagles this year. Okay, also beat the Eagles. Lost to the Broncos. They actually beat the Lions this year. So I do want to say this is a good Bucs team. Don't let their 10-7 record fool you. So we are going to pick the Buccaneers to win this game. I know I shouldn't. I know I say I should. I need to pick some upsets. But that's what we're going with. And following that, we will reach our final game of Wild Card Weekend. And it is my favorite team, the Minnesota Vikings, as we take on the Los Angeles Rams. But as we all know, Los Angeles is burning to the ground. The wrath of God has touched down in California. And this game has been forced to be moved to none other than Arizona. Meaning, my 14-3 Vikings will be taking on the 10-7 Rams at a neutral playing zone. I'm very happy. The Vikings, of course, ended the year on a very sour note, getting blown out by the Lions. Not very ideal, but same goes for the Rams. You know, they lost to the Seahawks. That's not a positive way to end the year. So, if I'm both of these teams, I'm coming into this. It's a 50-50 game. Of course, we played earlier in the season. We lost, was it 30-20? 30-20, I think it was. Yeah, we gave up a dumbass safety. They missed a face mask call on Sam Darnold. Absolutely rigged game that was. But, you know, this one's tough. This one's tough. I feel like I'm forced to pick the Vikings in this one. You know, I feel like I'm forced to. But it's like all the odds are stacked against us. We've lost this team before. We have no momentum. But still, you know, we ride with the Vikings. It's not going to be an easy path to the playoffs. I'd say the most ideal way the Vikings could make the Super Bowl. The most ideal way the Minnesota Vikings can make the Super Bowl is, of course, we beat the Rams. We would then need either the Commanders or the Packers to win, which I think is very likely, which would set us up for a matchup with either one of those two teams. So if it was me, I think the Packers could seriously beat the Eagles. I just think the Packers always come alive at the start of the playoffs, meaning we would take on the Buccaneers or the Commanders, which I pick the Vikings in that. Okay, I would pick ourselves in that, especially if the Commanders were to win and we get to play at home. I think that would be very realistic, but I think no matter what, if we beat the Rams, all paths lead to the Lions. So Of course, when we look back on this season, our kryptonite is going to literally be the Los Angeles Rams and the Detroit Lions. That's our only kryptonite. The only teams we will have lost to all season, I think, will have been those two teams. But I will pick the Vikings, 7 o'clock, January 13th. We will play, and I can only hope we can win. Truly, I only hope we can win. If I'm following my bracket correctly, I think honestly it's going to be a Lions and Bills Super Bowl. That's what I'm really hoping for. I'm really hoping the Chiefs lose. But I think, Chiefs, they're going to play the winner of the Chargers-Texans game most likely. Either one of those teams, I think the Chargers would give them a better run for their money, but I think they're winning that no matter what, which means you're getting the winner of a Bills and Ravens game, which I predict. And I think that Lamar curse sticks with them. I think the Bills advance past that. And the Bills are the only team that can defeat the Chiefs. I don't think the Ravens have it in them to beat the Chiefs. I think it is legit only the Bills, all right? And they avoided them last year, but this year it's inevitable. So those are your NFL wildcard predictions. We'll see what happens. Of course, we'll be back next week to talk about a whole plethora of different matchups. So that's all we got. But in terms of UFC, that's not all we have, because we still have our UFC Vegas 101. That's right, we're still doing UFC Vegas events. And this isn't the most loaded card. In fact, it's unloaded. It's a very mediocre card. But nonetheless, we still got to cover it, drop our predictions, see what'll happen. Let's check it out. Kicking off the new year of 2025, your first fight will be in the men's lightweight division, as we have Norulu Tajik Eagle Aliyev taking on Joe Solecki. Norulu coming in this one undefeated, 9-0. Undefeated fighter Joe Solecki, 13-5, 5'10 to 5'9, does give Norulu 1 inch in height. He also has 2 inches in reach, 72 inches to 70, an orthodox stance for both of these individuals. Norulu, the favorite in this one, minus 540. Joe is the underdog at plus 400. Norulu Aliyev, 24 years old, from Tajikistan. Of those 9 wins, only 2 KOs, so a lot of decision wins. He was actually supposed to fight Matus Rebeke November 11th, 2023, and he was supposed to fight Yanal Ashmaz on this event. So Norulu Aliyev hasn't actually fought since February of 2025, which has been a long time coming. Now, he did fight Rafael Alves in his debut, grappling him to a decision. But, I mean, it's been a long time. That's a long time to not fight. He was only linked to one fight at the end of 2023. No fights in 2024 for him. But 9-0, undefeated, a lot of potential. Plus minus 540. That's a big on the favorite for this contest. His opponent, Joe Solecki, the underdog, 31 years old, from New Jersey. Of his 13 wins, he has 1 knockout and 8 submissions. Of his 5 losses, he's been knocked out twice. He actually won a grappling match on November 2nd, which was the last time he competed in any form of mixed martial arts. But 2024, not so kind to Joe. Lost the decision in June to Grant Dawson. Got out grappled in that one. Other than that, not terrible run. The UFC, 5-3, holds a submission win over Austin Hubbard and Carl Deaton. Does have decision losses to Jared Gordon and Grant Dawson, as I mentioned. He also has a slam finish loss to Jakar Close. So, we'll see how this one goes for Joe. Joe, a submission grappler as they come. I'm sure you're going to see Norulu go for some takedowns in this one, and you're either going to be seeing Joe be able to defend them and get a submission, or you're going to see him, like what happened in the Grant Dawson fight, be unable to stop them and get out grappled. So I do believe it is that second option. I think Norulu is going to grapple Joe to a victory, and we'll see if this year off has helped Norulu or if it has impacted him negatively. But Joe Solecki, I think he's going to lose to young up-and-comers like this, and he's going to beat some more seasoned veterans down the line. So Norulu Aliyev over Joe Solecki. Do it for Tajikistan. Norulu, I believe he's the only UFC fighter out of Tajikistan. I don't know if that's true or not. Next up, your first women's bout of the year, women's strawweight action, as Fatima the Archangel Klein, that's a crazy nickname, the Archangel, as she takes on Victoria Dudikova. Fatima is 6-1, Victoria is 8-1. 5'6 to 5'5 gives Fatima 1 inch in height. They both have a 67-inch reach and both fight in the orthodox fighting position. Very similar. Fatima minus 900 is the favorite. That's crazy. Almost a 1,000-point favorite. Victoria Dudikova is the plus 615 underdog. Fatima Klein, 24 years old, from New York. She was actually a Cage Fury double champion Wow, so out of her 6 professional wins, she became a double champion in those. Fatima, where else? Her first fight was actually on short notice against Jasmine Jasser DeVicious up in weight, which she had in July. She lost that fight to Jasmine Jasser DeVicious, but made it somewhat competitive. So I think that's the background to why she has a loss in her debut. For Victoria, coming in this one, big underdog, 25 years old from Russia. Of her 8 wins, 2 knockouts, and 4 subs, she lost her first professional fight in August, losing a split decision to Sam Hughes. Her grappling did not help her in that matchup. Other than that, she's won 2 fights in the UFC. One, her opponent got injured 30 seconds in, and the other, she dominated Jin Yu Furay. This should be very competitive, but this is also a fight that just screams upset to me. You know, think about Wang Kong. She was a minus 900 favorite, and she lost. But I do want to say Fatima was a double champ in another promotion. Her only career loss was on short notice to Jasmine Jasser DeVicious. I hope for anyone who's not familiar with Jasmine knows just how dominant she is. Probably the future of Canadian MMA. And as of right now, she's ranked number 12 in the women's flyweight division. So Fatima, we're going to back you in this one. And if you're as good as you claim to be, you should be getting a knockout in this one. But honestly, I'm probably going to go with the decision. Following that, we get our first big boy matchup of the year as we head to the men's light heavyweight division as Magomed Gadziyazulov. I'm going to try and pronounce it correctly. Gadziyazulov. I think that's good enough. Takes on Brunão Lopes. His nickname is Brunão. His name is Bruno. Interesting. Very interesting. Magomed 9-0. Bruno is 13-1. Both men are 6'2". 75-inch reach compared to 74-inch reach does give Magomed just a slight inch reach advantage. And they both stand the orthodox fighting position. They're also both 31 years old. I mean, these two are eerily similar, if you're asking me. Let's start with the minus 225 favorite, the undefeated Russian Magomed Gadziyazulov, 31, from Baran, actually, born in Dagestan. If no one knows where Baran is, it's actually where Shamil Gaziev fights out of. I can't believe I actually know that. Of his 9 wins, 4 KOs, and 1 sub. Won on Damon's Contender Series in 2023, made his debut in 2024, and grappled Brenson Ribeiro to a decision win. But he's back in action. Wasn't the most exciting fight against, Brenson Ribeiro, but got the job done. Sometimes the sloppy wins are the ones where you actually show the most prowess in. So we'll see if he can bounce back here and get a dominant win against Bruno Lopes. Bruno, 31 years old as well, from Brazil, though, the plus 185 underdog, has 11 finishes and 13 career wins. He has 6 KOs and 5 subs, and he's currently on a 2-fight winning streak. He originally got knocked out by actually the man who Magomed beat in his debut, Brenson Ribeiro, on Damon's Contender Series in 2023. But he came back in August last year, knocked out Mikhail Sadiev in round number 2 after being dropped in round 1, funny enough. So Bruno coming in this one on a little 2-fight winning streak, but I'm going to be honest, guys, there's just something about these undefeated Russians. We're going to go with Magomed, another grappling win here. And, you know, the only thing I'll say about Bruno is I don't think his chin's all there, so you could even see a Magomed knockout, in my opinion. But the 13-1 record is fancy, but when you're getting knocked out in the Contender Series, then you're getting dropped again and only to get a comeback TKO win, it doesn't leave me very confident for you. So Magomed over Bruno, that's who we're going with. Back down to the women's division as we get our first women's flyweight action of the year as Ernesta heavy-handed Karakayat takes on Nicole Calieri. Ernesta is 5-1-1, Nicole 8-2. 5'9" to 5'3" gives Ernesta a notable 6 inches in height. Also has an insane 9-inch reach advantage, 71 inches to 62. Orthodox stance for both of these women. Ernesta is the minus 275 favorite. Nicole closing as the plus 220 underdog. Wow. Unreal reach advantage for Ernesta. 26-year-old is from Lithuania, and out of her 5 wins has 2 knockouts. Won on Dana White's Contender Series in 2023, then made her debut in May, dropping a decision to Dione Barbosa. Not much is known about Ernesta, but her size advantage could prove beneficial in this matchup against Nicole Calieri. Nicole making her debut, the plus 220 underdog, is 28 years old from Brazil. Of her 8 wins, she has a 100% finish rate, 5 knockouts, 3 subs. Currently on a 4-fight winning streak. Her only loss, really, she was submitted, so pretty good stuff for Nicole. Last time she fought was in September, where she won on Dana's Contender Series with a round one armbar. Look, I love it. I love seeing 100% finish rates. And as much as Ernesta has a big reach advantage, I think you're going to see your first Dana's Contender Series fighter make a jump this year in Nicole Calieri. Look, there's not much to go off of here. She's 28. Ernesto's 26. Ernesto's got a big size advantage, but if Nicole can get to the ground, she will have some success. So we're going to go with Nicole Calieri. She's an underdog. If you're going to pick underdogs, I'm doing it in these women's fights where it's pretty much 50-50. That's what we're going to ride with. After that, we get another short notice matchup here in the welterweight division, first welterweight matchup of the year, as Preston Pressure Parsons will be taking on the short notice fighter in Jacoby Kobe Smith. Okay, why is your nickname Kobe if your first name's Jacoby? You know what? I'm just a podcaster. What do I know? Preston, 11-5. Jacoby undefeated, 9-0. Both men, 5'11 to 5'10. Preston has 1 inch in height. Jacoby, 72-71, has 1 inch in reach. Southpaw with that left for Kobe. Orthodox with that right for Pressure Parsons. Preston Parsons, you know, the 29-year-old from Florida, has 9 knockouts out of his 11 wins. Now, of his 5 losses, he's been finished 3 times, twice by knockout and 1 by sub. He was originally supposed to take on the Ultimate Fighter runner-up Andreas Gustafsson, but Andreas had to pull out. So instead, he'll be taking on Jacoby Smith. Preston has gone win-loss since joining the UFC. He's been knocked out by Daniel Rodriguez, then won a decision over Evan Elder. He's dropped a decision to Trevin Giles, then won a decision over Matthew Semelsberger. Last time he fought in July, lost to Obon Elliott. So Preston, all of his fights are very close, 2-3 in the UFC. This will be a proving fight for him against the Dana White's Contender Series veteran in Jacoby Smith. Jacoby from Oklahoma, the 28-year-old, has 7 knockouts of his 9 undefeated wins. Trains at Fortis MMA in Texas, very notable gym. Got a TKO on the Contender Series. He's the favorite coming into this one. We're going with Jacoby Smith. And it's nothing against Preston, but, I mean, Jacoby's just very spicy with all of his appetizing sets. You know, undefeated, all the finishes coming into this one, domination so far. And with Preston, it's just been close decision after close decision. So we're going to go with Jacoby Smith to get the short notice win. But, hey, Pressure Parsons, maybe he'll get it done. Preston Pressure Parsons, it's like a little riddle trying to say his name. Back to the men's lightweight division as Thiago Moises takes on Trey Shamurai. Ogden, S-H-A-M-U-R-I, Shamurai. Making everyone think I have a lisp saying that. Thiago Moises, minus 195 is the favorite. The plus 160 underdog is Trey Shamurai Ogden. 18-8 is Thiago Moises' professional record. Trey Ogden, 18-6 with one no contest. 5'11 to 5'9 gives Trey 2 inches in height. He also has 2 inches in reach. 72 inches is 70. Both men stand in the orthodox fighting position. Let's start with Thiago Moises, you know, former UFC main eventer. Okay, he's been around since 2018 in the promotion. The 29-year-old is from Brazil, and out of his 18 wins, has 12 finishes, 4 by knockout, 8 by submission. Of his 8 losses, he's been knocked out once and submitted twice. I mean, Thiago, he's been fighting tough competition since the get-go. I mean, Benil Dariush, Demir Ismagulov, Bobby Green, Michael Johnson, main event against Islam Makhachev, Joel Alvarez, Christos Giagos, Benoit Saint-Denis. Last time he got a win was in March against Mitch Ramirez. His last time out against Ludwig Klein, though, in June, he did get dominantly beaten. So, Thiago, coming into this one, he's coming off a loss, but I mean, Thiago never gets an easy opponent, and this one will prove pretty telling if he can get past him in Trey Shamurai Ogden. The 35-year-old is from Kansas, and out of his 18 wins, has 11 submissions. Out of his 6 losses, he has been submitted 3 times, so it appears to be submissions are all that Trey Ogden knows. Trey, so far, is 3-2 with 1 no contest in the UFC. Lost his debut to Jordan Leavitt, then beat Daniel Zaluber, then dropped a decision to Ignacio Bahomanes, then had a no contest against Nicholas Moto, which was all BS. He should have won that. Following that in 2024, 2-0 with 2 decision wins, got it done in the grappling department. I think you see a Thiago Moises submission here. Okay, I think Thiago Moises has excellent submission abilities. I think you're going to see a little arm triangle, maybe even a little, I want to say triangle choke. You can even see an arm bar. I just think if Trey's going to try and bring this to the ground, this is where Thiago's going to find some success. find a way to get it done and get the submission victory. So we are going to ride with Thiago Moises over Trey Ogden. Thiago's just one of those guys where I feel like he's going to beat anyone unranked, and anyone even in the rankings or on the verge of the rankings are going to beat him. So we'll see how it turns out, but should be fun. After that, our first middleweight matchup of the year as Marco Matutu Tulio takes on Ior Duelist Portera. Could be the final time you see Ior Portera. This is a must win, I should say. Not a much win, a must win for Ior Portera. Marco Tulio, 12-1, is the -530 favorite. Ior Portera, 20-7 professional record, is the +380 underdog. 6'3 to 6 foot gives Ior 3 inches in height. He also has an inch in reach, 75 to 74. Southpaw stance with that left for Ior Portera, orthodox with that right for Marco Tulio. I don't know what to say here, man. This is just your typical dominant up-and-comer taking on a veteran of the game. Marco Tulio, 30 years old, from Brazil, has eight knockouts and one sub in his 12 professional victories. Out of his one loss, his one defeat, he wasn't even submitted. He lost the decision. He's been on an 8-fight winning streak. Wow, Marco Tulio's been on the run of a lifetime. He's fought on Dana White's Contender Series twice. Most recently, in August of this year, landed a spinning back kick to Matthias Duclos to get a contract. So good for Marco. Finally getting into the UFC, and despite being older than Ior Portera, he is not actually as experienced as Ior Portera comes into this one, 20-7 at 28 years old. Hailing from Ukraine, he has 16 finishes in his 20 wins, 9 knockouts, and 7 subs. Now, out of his 7 losses, he has been finished 5 times, 4 by knockout and once by submission. So Ior Portera, it's been rough. It's been rough. He is 2-5 in the UFC. This is do or die. This is do or die. Now, mind you, I do want to add Carlos Ulberg, Rodolfo Bellotto, Michelle Pereira, Cesar Almeida. He's taking on some tough strikers. Okay, he's taking on some tough guys in the UFC, but I just don't think he's going to do it. I mean, he's had such a weird career. Such a weird career. At 25 years old, he was knocking out Nicola Negomorano and retiring him. I mean, what? That was so... I mean, Mauricio Rua, Shogun Hua, the man who John Jones beat for the championship. That's who he was fighting when he was that young. Now, since then, taking some rough knockout losses. But if he's going to pull something out of his bag, it's going to be against someone against the likes of Marco Tulio. Now, am I picking Ior Portera? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Every time I watch Portera fight, I just think his chin is just waiting to be cracked. And I think Marco Tulio's been on the run of a lifetime, and it continues here with another knockout win in round 2 over Ior Portera. So we're going with Marco Tulio to get it done. But hey, maybe Ior Portera can pull off an upset. You never know what'll happen. Following that, we head to the men's flyweight division as Jose Zacarias Johnson takes on Felipe Filipino Bunez. Jose Johnson, 16-9, Felipe 13-7. 6'5'7" gives Jose 5 inches in height. He has a 2-inch reach advantage of 71-69. Both men stand the orthodox fighting position. Jose Johnson, one of the tallest flyweights on the roster at 6 foot. He is the -185 favorite. The 29-year-old hails from Flint, Michigan. Out of his 16 wins, he has 8 knockouts and 1 submission. Out of his losses, his 9 losses, he's been knocked out once and submitted 4 times. Jose has gone 1-2 in the UFC. Losses to Damon Blackshear and Asu Almobayev, and he does hold a win at bantamweight over Chad Ann Hellinger. This will be a big tell of if he can hang in the UFC against someone like Felipe Bunez, who has really been decent so far in his career, but unfortunately did suffer a loss in his debut. Felipe, the +155 underdog, 35, from Brazil. Of his 13 wins, 3 knockouts, 8 subs. Of his 7 losses, he's been finished 3 times. Took on Joshua Van last January and got knocked out in round 2. That was actually the first fight of 2024, funny enough. So Felipe on the first card of the year, again looking to get back in the win category. You know, in that fight against Joshua Van, he looked good in round 1, landed a takedown, outstruck him, almost doubled his strikes in round 1, but he just couldn't translate that over to round 2. So Felipe is going to get something done. He's going to want to take it down, take Jose down to the ground, beat him there, but it's hard to bet against a 6 foot freaking tall flyweight, so we'll go with the big boy, Jose Johnson. I know we're picking all the favorites, but it's hard not to. This man is almost double the size of some of these fighters. I swear, he is a tall, tall boy. Moving on from there, welterweight action as we get into our six-fight main card as Punahali Soriano takes on Euros the Dr. Bedich. What a nickname. Puna Soriano is plus 165 at the underdog spot. Euros the Dr. Bedich is a minus 200 favorite. Punahali 10-4, Euros 10-2. 6'1" to 5'11" gives Euros 2 inches in height, but the reach advantage goes to Punahali Soriano, 72-71. Both men actually stay on the southpaw fighting stance. Okay, a little left hand action in this one. Punahali Soriano, 32 years old from Hawaii, one of the rare Hawaii fighters. 8 finishes in his 10 wins with 6 knockouts and 2 submissions. Of his 4 losses, he's been finished twice. Punahali had so much potential at one point. He was in 7-0, or is he 8-0 undefeated fighter, then ran into Brendan Allen, got outgrappled by Nick Maximoff, big knockout over Dulce Luciambula, then gets knocked out by Roman Kopilov, submitted by Dustin Stolfus. Last time out, though, in June, did pick up a big win over Michael Beza, dominating him in that fight. So Punahali is coming in with some momentum, but it's going to be tough. Going to be tough, especially against the likes of Euros Medic, because Punahali fought at middleweight for a long time, but has recently dropped down to welterweight. Euros is 31 years old from Serbia, but now actually lives and trains in Alaska, of all places. Huh, funny enough. 8 knockouts and 2 subs give him a 100% finish rate, and both of his losses he's been submitted in. So Euros Medic has literally never been to a decision in his entire fighting career. I mean, he is a physical fighter and a risky fighter at that. So far, 4-3, 4-2 in the UFC. Good stuff. Round 1 finishes, performance bonuses. His only losses are to Jalen Turner and Mike Tibet-Gorlby, which aren't too bad losses. So, look, I have seen him fight many a times. I know how dominant Euros Medic is, and I'm going with a round 2 submission for Medic over Punahali Soriano. I mean, this guy just brings it. Okay, he's got that Serbian energy, that Eastern European just take nothing from anyone mentality, and I like it. And Punahali, I just think he's just not on the level of someone of Euros Medic. So Euros, I think he's going to use his excellent striking, excellent grappling, and he's going to get a victory here to kick off the new year in the men's welterweight division. After that, we drop down to the men's featherweight division as Christian Rodriguez welcomes Austin Bashy to the UFC. Christian is the plus 195 underdog. Austin, in his debut, is the minus 235 favorite. Christian, 11-2. Austin, 13-0. 5'6 to 5'7 gives Christian 1 inch in height. He also has an inch in reach, 71-70. Both men are in that orthodox fighting position. Christian, coming into this one, 27 years old from Milwaukee. Of his 11 wins, 7 finishes, 3 knockouts, and 4 subs. Out of his 2 losses, he's only ever been submitted once, which was actually his last time out against Julian Arosa. But Christian Rodriguez went on a crazy run where he fought 4 undefeated fighters in a row and beat all of them. Joshua Weems, Raul Rosas Jr., Cameron Salmon, and Isaac Dalgarian. It was quite the run, but he actually took on someone of a higher caliber against Julian Arosa and just got ran through. So back to the groundwork for Christian Rodriguez as he welcomes into the UFC another undefeated up-and-comer, a 23-year-old from Michigan with 8 finishes, Austin Bashy. Of those 8, 3 knockouts and 5 subs. Won his debut over Dorian Ramos. Okay, 10 takedowns in an 8-minute and 15-second fight before he got the submission. I mean, pretty dominant. Pretty dominant, and I mean, the only tough thing about this is Christian's just known for stopping these guys. He's known for getting it done, known for stopping them, especially in the Isaac Dalgarian fight. Isaac landed 7 takedowns, wasn't enough to sway the judges. So, Christian, known for stopping guys. I don't see that with Austin Bashy. I see a lot of potential with this kid. So, I am going to pick him, but I will be cautious. I will be cautious with Austin Bashy. But should be intense. Should be an intense fight. Should be a good matchup. Christian, I mean, both of these guys, you're going to see grappling, you're going to see striking. They don't specialize in one or the other. Should be a high-paced matchup. After this, I don't know how this isn't the co-main event. Like I'm actually so perplexed, but Chris Action Man Curtis takes on Roman Kopilov on the 4th fight of the main card. I mean, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? Chris is the underdog, plus 210. Roman the favorite at minus 265. This should just not be here. This should be the co-main event. I'd even gave in this main event over the main event. Chris Curtis, 31-11 with unknown contest. He's experienced as they come. Roman is 13-3. 6 foot to 5'10", gives Roman 2 inches in height. Both men, 75-inch reach advantage, but the southpaw stands for Roman, and the orthodox stands for Chris Curtis, is where they defer. Let's start with the action man. You know, Chris Curtis, he's been in some main events. He's been in the rankings. I mean, this guy's a legit fighter. Win over Brendan Allen. Last time he fought in April, lost to Brendan Allen. He's beaten Marc-Andre Barriot, which was his last win in January. He's lost to Nazardine. He's lost to Kelvin Gastelum. He's knocked out Joaquin Buckley. He's knocked out Phil Haas. I mean, you never know what you're going to get with Chris Curtis, but he is exciting. He loves to bring it. And, man, let me just tell you, this guy's a tough fighter. Okay, he ain't easy to finish. He's actually, has he ever been finished? You know, Chris, 37 years old from Las Vegas, 18 finishes out of those 31 wins. He's only ever been finished twice. Wow. Very interesting. He did have a fight scheduled against Kevin Holland in October, but had to pull out of that, so we do know that he is trying to stay active. His opponent, though, Roman Kopylov, on the verge of the rankings, as always, 32 years old from Russia. Of his 13 wins, 11 knockouts. Now, of his 3 losses, he's actually been submitted twice, funny enough. He was last supposed to fight Bruno Ferreira in August, but had to pull out of that fight. So instead, he will be in here against Chris Curtis. Roman, last time he fought, beat Cesar Almeida. Before that, got submitted by Anthony Hernandez. And before that, was on a 4-fight, round 2 knockout streak, with 2 of the 4 coming from head kicks, crazy enough. So, Roman, we know he's legit. We know he's a good fighter. I will say Chris Curtis is more of a striker, and if this is a striking matchup, I do lean towards Roman Kopylov in this one. But the Cesar Almeida fight, he did have some issues against the striking capabilities of Cesar Almeida, so we'll have to see. And as far as the Brendan Allen-Chris Curtis fight goes, we all know Brendan Allen wanted to keep it on the ground. Chris wanted it on the feet, so this is kind of a toss-up for me. I don't really know what to go with in this one. Chris hasn't done historically the best on decisions, but Roman Kopylov, you never know what you're going to get. I do like the Russians' odds in this one, so I am going to go with Roman Kopylov, but this is going to be close. This is going to be a close fight, so we'll have to see what happens. I'm going to go with Roman Kopylov. The Russian, is it bad I'm going with the Russian over the American? Oh no, I hope not. More middleweight action as Cesar Almeida takes on Abdul Razak Al-Hassan. Cesar Almeida 6-1. Abdul is 12-6 with 1-0 contest. Interesting. 6'1" to 5'10" does give Abdul a 3-inch reach deficit. Cesar Almeida has the height advantage there. The reach, actually, is where we see some difference. 74 to 73. Cesar has an inch reach advantage. Orthodox stands for both of these men. You know, they're pretty even. Pretty even across the board. Cesar is the minus 300 favorite. Abdul is the plus 240 underdog. Cesar is 36 years old from Brazil. 4 knockouts of his 6 wins. But so far in the UFC, kind of lackluster. Some just average decisions here and there. He's an experienced striker. Let me tell you, he just has no grappling abilities whatsoever. Zero grappling abilities. So if you're going to see anywhere he loses in this fight, it's going to be in the grappling. Anywhere he wins, it'll be in an early exchange and he gets a knockdown. For Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, this guy, plus 240 underdog, 39 years old from Texas. Of his 12 wins, 12 knockouts. Isn't that crazy? 12 wins, 12 knockouts. Of his 6 losses, he's been submitted twice. He's actually supposed to fight in October. So last time he actually fought was in July. Lost a had a no contest against Cody Brundage. So Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, been a while since he's last fought and been with the UFC for 8 years now, going on 9 in November. It's been a good run. Been a good run so far, you know, never really amounted enough to go all the way to the top, but he's picked up some good wins here and there. His last official win did come in January of 2023, though, so he has 2 years due. And here's a fun fact the UFC actually shared is that Abdul Razak Al-Hassan is 6-0 when he lands a takedown in a fight, so if he's going to want to win, he's going to have to land a takedown, and honestly, I'm running with an upset here. I'm going with Abdul Razak Al-Hassan. All right, I think he takes down Cesar Almeida, takes his back. It's a little TKO from behind or even in top mount. And that is how you see an Abdul Razak Al-Hassan win. Now, the other issue here is if Abdul Razak Al-Hassan gets clipped, he's probably going down. So this is going to be pretty early on. You're going to tell in one of the first few exchanges who is going to win this matchup. We're going to go with Abdul Razak Al-Hassan, especially if he lands a takedown. But this is a toss-up. So best of luck to both gentlemen, but we will ride with the boy who was actually born in Minneapolis, Abdul Razak Al-Hassan. That's right. He's actually born in Minnesota, which means we have to support him. The co-main event, I mean, it's about as average as you get. Santiago Ponzinibbio, Carlson Harris, two guys past their prime. The Argentine Dagger is 30-8. The Mocambique, Carlson Mocambique Harris is 19-6. Both men are 6 foot. You get a 3-inch reach advantage, 76-73 for Carlson. Both have a orthodox fighting position. They're both -110. You know, there's about as even as you can get with these two. For Santiago, I mean, it's been a tough fall from grace. 38 years old from Argentina, 22 finishes in his 30 wins, 16 knockouts, 6 subs. Of his 8 losses, he's been finished 4 times, all of them by knockout. Santiago, at one point, was on 8-fight winning streak before leaving for 3 years. Comes back, gets knocked out, then has a fight of the night. Then drops a split decision, he should have lost. Then drops a split decision, he should have won. Then has a great comeback win against Alex Morono. Then gets knocked out by Kevin Holland. Last time he fought in July, lost a split decision to Muslim Salikov. It's been a tough going for Santiago, so this is the must-win for him. If he loses this, he'll then be 1-5 in his last 6, which means he's probably getting cut. So you're going to want to see some urgency from Santiago to keep his career afloat. For his opponent, Carlson Harris, 37 years old from Guyana, he has 5 knockouts and 6 subs in his 19 wins. Of his 6 losses, he's been knocked out 3 times, including last time out in May, where he was knocked out in 90 seconds by Chaos Williams. Other than that, he's gotten some anaconda chokes in a comeback win. He's picked up decision wins over Jared Gooden. He's TKO'd Impa Kansaganov. So, I mean, you never know what you're going to get. He's also been knocked out by Shavkat Rakhmonov. It's a hit or miss with Carlson, but we will ride with Santiago one last time. I will put my faith in Santiago, who is on a 2-fight losing streak. I will put my faith in you one last time, Santiago. We're going to say a decision win for you, but at this rate, I expect nothing from these guys. They're both pushing 40. They don't have anything left to fight for in the UFC except to make a quick dollar. It'll be interesting to see how they show up to perform. But with that, you know, like I said, there's just not much action on this card as we get to the main event. I mean, I'm probably not even going to watch it. Mackenzie Dern, Amanda Ribas. Dern is the number 6 ranked woman strawweight in the world. Ribas is the number 8 ranked at actually women's strawweight. At women's flyweight, she actually ranked number 10, so she's ranked in 2 divisions. Dern is the +175 underdog. Amanda Ribas is the -210 favorite. Both these women, 31 years old, funny enough. Mackenzie, 14-5. Ribas is 13-5. 5'4 to 5'3 gives Dern 1 inch in height. 3 inches in reach go to Ribas, 66-63. Both women are in the orthodox stance. I mean, this is a close competitive fight. Truly is the 6th ranked woman strawweight. Mackenzie Dern is 31 years old from California. Of her 14 wins, she has 7 submissions. Of her 5 losses, she's only ever been knocked out once. Only ever been finished once. These two were actually supposed to fight December 14th, but this was moved here to be the main event of this card. Dern, been with the UFC for 6-7 years now. Wow, debuted in 2018. These two actually fought in 2019, where Amanda Ribas won a decision. Ooh, fun enough. So this is a little rematch. How about 6 years in the making? She's picking up some good wins here and there. Went over Virna Jandiroba, Nina Nunez, Angela Hill. Most recently in August, beat Lupi Godinez. Then she has losses to Marina Rodriguez, Jan Chionin, Jessica Andrade, and Amanda Lemos. But Mackenzie Dern always seems to be involved in an exciting fight. And, you know, I still remember in May, her fight of the night, main event win over Angela Hill in a fight night. Very entertaining. Very entertaining. I won't lie, I'm very surprised how many main events they've given Mackenzie Dern. Since 2021, Mackenzie Dern has been in 3 main events. This will be her 4th, so good for her, honestly. Good for her. She's a submission expert. She can also throw some hands, too. Should be exciting. Her opponent, Amanda Ribas, coming off a main event loss to Rose Namajunas last March. Her last win came with a TKO in 2023 against Luiana Pinheiro. Amanda, from Brazil, 4 knockouts and 4 subs make up her 13 wins. Of her 5 losses, she's been knocked out 3 times. Amanda, been with the UFC since 2019, holds a win over Mackenzie Dern, also holds wins over Randa Marcos, Paige VanZant, Virna Jandiroba, and Vivian Araújo. Her losses, you know, Rose, Barber, Caitlin Cerminera, Marina Rodriguez. I mean, I'm listing off the number 9, the number 7, the number 6, the number 4. You're, you know, top-level women are who these two lose to. And the winner of this is looking up into the top 5. Okay, so whoever wins this is going to be on the verge of a top 5 fight in the women's strawweight division. I'm going to be honest. I'm a Mackenzie Dern fan. I've been watching her all this time. She's always exciting. She always fights with urgency, which is what I like to see. I do want to see a finish from her here. So I don't know if she's going to get one, but I really would like to see one to really stake a claim for something. Dern hasn't gotten a finish in quite a while, actually, since 2021. So if she could get back to the submission wins, not these decision wins, that would be very good. So we will pick Mackenzie Dern over Amanda Ribas. It's a 50-50 fight, as a lot of these are. But hey, UFC's back. I won't complain. And by the way, guys, I mean, we're going to be back in due time to talk about the absolute amazing show. I don't even know what word to use that UFC 311 is. Okay, guys. Inglewood, California, the Intuit Dome. Islam Makhachev, Armin Sarukian, main event. Co-main event, Merab and Umar. How about on the main card, Jiri versus Jamal. Beneil Dariush and Amoykano. Kevin Hall and Randy Ritter. Let's go to the prelims. Johnny Walker, Bogdan Guskov. Peyton Talbot, Randy Barcells, Halton Almeida, Sergey Spivak, Zachary Reese is back in action, Grant Dawson is back in action, Aileen Perez, who we said would have the best rise at this year at Women's Bantamweight, she's back in action, the undefeated Japanese fighter, Rinya Nakamura, you also have Bernardo Sopaj, you have Tagir Limbekov. This is a loaded card, okay, don't let this fool you, UFC 311 is my official start of 2025, but guys, thank you so much for listening. It's always fun ranking stuff that happened in 2024. We have one more ranking left to do as we rank every fight night main event of the year. That will be done on our next episode, most likely. We're also going to do our end of the year fantasy review. Once I'm back down at college, I'm going to try and do some more guests on the podcast. We're going to try and grow this, and maybe I'll retire as a rich millionaire one day and be able to give back to the people that supported me. But as for now, I'm signing off, guys. Have an amazing weekend. Go Vikings. Go Mackenzie Dern. I'll even say go Texas. Why not? I could care less. But, guys, have a blessed year. Have a blessed life. And as always, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.